later, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Clive Ball.
Good morning, it's LBC on a Friday morning through till 4. I'm Clive Bull, and in this hour we are going to focus on technology. If you want some buying advice, you want to know how something works or what to look for, if you're thinking about perhaps splashing out on a new phone or a particular type of phone or a laptop or a vacuum cleaner or one of those robot cleaners, whatever it might be, you've got a question, then get in touch, because we have Fevzi Turkout, the tech expert from Gadget Detective, with us between now and 3. And we're going to focus particularly on Black Friday as well to begin with, and what you can look out for, how to spot a bargain, and how to avoid a rip-off as well. Now, if you'd like to put a question then or make a comment, do get in touch. Usual rules apply. 0345 6060973 is the number to call in. If you've got a question, then great. If you can't call in, send a message in, and we'll do our best to put it to Fevzi and get an answer. You can WhatsApp on the same number, or you can text 84850, or talk into Alexa and send a comment to LBC. And we do these occasional hours, and it is noticeable that I think it may be because a lot of people have the tech available that they send a lot of messages and pictures and WhatsApps and so on. But do feel you can call in as well if you've got a question, particularly if you want some buying advice. 0345 6060 973. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning.
So we're going to talk about Black Friday because, well, first of all, as I was explaining earlier, it's actually next Friday, but we thought we'd better do it early. And in fact, it's already turned into a whole week, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the discounts that I found started yesterday. Some of them will actually end before Black Friday. So Black Friday is a week from today. So think of it as at least a week before and maybe a couple of weeks after. But the discounts, even from single brands, they're often phasing them. Some of them are pushing out all the discounts at once, but others are phasing them, you know, product by product over time. So, you know, the trick is really to think about what it is you want to buy and don't be prompted just because something looks too cheap. You know, when we say it would be rude not to buy it, well, sometimes we have to be rude.
So what's the background to Black Friday?
So it originated in the US in the 1960s as the day after Thanksgiving, and it was when bricks and mortar stores would offer big discounts. So it was, you know, it became a tradition after the day after Thanksgiving just to do that, just as, you know, we have different shopping traditions now. It was in from the 60s there. It didn't catch on in this country until the early 2010s, and initially it wasn't a big deal, but then as Amazon and other retailers sort of caught up with it, it's just a way of bringing focus to people, and they hope that they'll bring purchases forward. And that was one of the pieces of advice I wanted to share, actually. It's not only make sure you know what you want and buy only what you need or what you want, don't be responsive to offers, but be proactive. But also don't buy things before you need them. There's a temptation to think, oh, it's really cheap, I'll buy it now and I'll use it in 6 months' time. But particularly with tech items, that item could be replaced in that 6 months or drop in price. For example, you know, memory products will tend to drop quite significantly in a 6 month period. So my tip to people is, you know, think about how you're going to use it now, where in your home or office it will go. Have you made space for it? What are you going to do with the old one? Have you actually thought about this, or is it just a, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time purchase that maybe will sit in a box for 6 months or a year?
So would you say that they are real bargains, or is this all kind of clever marketing?
So there is a whole gamut from some of the best bargains ever. So the deals I've looked at, I've just checked, you know, I've checked, the deals I've checked are all items that I've tried and can recommend and are all currently on offer, and the offers are real. But there is a whole range from that, which are, you know, real bargains, you know, 40%, 50% off in some cases. They can be real, but you have to do your homework to see if they are. All the way through to deals that aren't really deals, because they were cheaper last week, even though. So they'll quote you a percentage off the recommended retail price, but it may be that the week before it was even cheaper and a bigger percentage off the RRP. So that's, you know, what I would term as, you know, misdescription, mis-selling, all the way through to out-and-out scams, which are often, you know, the products that are just too cheap to be true. Websites that you've never seen before, it's often worth checking how long that website has existed. If you do a Whois search, you can actually see that domain name may only have existed for a short period of time. Try and do some research and see if that retailer is legitimate.
Yeah, you know? I find even, you can't trust them always, but even doing a simple are there reviews of this website, if I've never heard of it before, and yes, they can fake reviews and all the rest of it, but if there's some complaints, they will normally come up and you just think, oh, I'm not going to go anywhere near that.
Yeah, I mean, and the clue is often in the price and the presentation quality, but some, with the advent of AI now, some of these websites are looking very convincing.
Yeah.
Some of them look like Amazon, for example, and very much at first glance. You have to sort of hover your mouse, and it's a bit of a problem when you're on a tablet or a smartphone. It's not as easy to do this trick, but you hover your mouse over a link or an email address, and you see that the underlying link or email address is actually not what it displays on your screen. So you just need to be very, very cautious. And I would say, when you choose an item, you shouldn't just choose, you know, an item that you need and is a good price and is a good item, but also buy it from a retailer that has a reputation to lose. Okay,
yeah.
So there are, you know, a high street department store, for example. When we're dealing with some online sites like Amazon, but not only Amazon, they make a lot of their business by being a marketplace, and you have what are called marketplace resellers. So you have a single listing for a product, but that product may be sold by various vendors on the same listing. So you might have Amazon itself, you might have a manufacturer, but you may have a number of others that may bubble up to the top because they knock themselves to be one pence cheaper and then they go to the top. And sometimes in Amazon and other websites, worth clicking down and seeing what all the purchase options are.
Definitely.
And it's off because of, if you, so the trick is, if you, I mean, we're talking about Amazon specifically now, but if you buy from Amazon, or as a minimum, the item is sold by a marketplace reseller, but it's fulfilled by Amazon. That's to say, it's posted to you by Amazon. That means Amazon's return policy applies. But if it is sold by and fulfilled by another business that might be great, but, you know, you're taking more of a chance, you're then reliant upon their returns policy, which may not be as generous.
Let me bring in a quick question on this area with Jamie in Newcastle. Hello, Jamie.
Hi, Carl. I'm a big fan.
What would you like to say?
Hi, Jamie.
Sorry, what was your guest call at Lee Rude?
Fevesy,
yeah.
Okay, hello. Yeah, no, quick question. So basically, I'm not going to name the website, obviously. A big holiday website, similar to Tui, those kind of places, advertising Black Friday deals. Basically, yep. These prices are the same as what was on last week. So it's absolute rubbish. I was in the USA a couple of years ago for Black Friday, and I got some amazing deals. Why is it in the UK, it's all just one big scam, I would say. It's, you don't get these deals. It's all rubbish. They say holidays are £1,000 per person, but actually £500 per person, and it was the same price last week. Why are they lying to us?
Yeah. So they're not all rubbish, but there is a lot of what you say is going on, and it's not lost on me that there is consumer law in England that says that if you say something is a discount, it must have sold at the higher price for a certain period. Remember when all the stores were sort of bricks and mortar stores, they'd pick one up in, you know, in the Outer Hebrides and choose that as a store that sold it more. It was a bit of a get-round.
And nobody actually bought it at that price,
no,
but it was advertised at that price.
But at least they made the effort. But now, our caller is correct that now it's very hard for trading standards to try and police. It's a bit, you know, I feel a bit like this with Ofcom and regulators and so forth, is that they are now minnows compared to these huge online monoliths, and it's very hard for a trading standards department, you know, or even Ofcom or whatever, to regulate and enforce the laws. So I think part of the problem is a lack of enforcement. Buried within all of that, and the reason why we're bothering to talk about it and not just say Black Friday bar humbug, is that there are some real bargains, but it's you've got to have your wits about you to sort the wheat from the chaff.
And what Jamie was saying there about, if you actually check, the price isn't really a bargain at all. It's not even any cheaper. Are there ways of checking prices in that way?
Yeah, so there are different ways. I mean, if you're thinking specifically of Amazon, and I don't want to dwell too much on it, but there are specific tools that work with Amazon and work very well, and it is such a popular site. There is camelcamelcamel.com, three camels in a row.
Camelcamelcamel.com.
I've
never heard of it.
And there is also a website called Keepa, K-E-E-P-A, not E-R, but A at the end, .com. Now, both of those, what you do is if you're on Amazon, you copy the link from the item that you're interested in from the Amazon website, and you paste it into those websites. And I emphasize that I personally prefer people to use the website as opposed to browser extensions, because when you've got a browser extension, you're giving up more privacy than you need to. You post it in there, and you get a price history for that item over however long it's been available, or the last 3 months or 6 months or a year you choose. And so it will give you certain information. It will tell you what's the highest it's ever been, what price is the highest, what's the lowest. It will give you the average selling price for that item, and it will draw you a nice chart over time, on price over time, which tells you exactly what you need to know at a glance as to whether that's a real deal or not.
Does sound like a good idea. So you should check, and that should point out whether it's a scam or not, then.
Yeah, and, well, yes. And also there are other websites which are price comparison websites, which obviously are not limited to just Amazon. So you've got things like pricespy.co.uk, or one word, and Idealo, the word ideal with a letter O at the end. Now, those are really good, because what you can do with those is not only compare prices as they are now, but as you can with CamelCamelCamel and Keepa.com, you can set up an alert to say, I'm interested in this item. If it drops to this price, or if the price drops even by a penny, alert me. And so that puts you in the driver's seat, as well, as it were. It's not the only thing you should do, because they're not real time, you know, it can be 2 or 3 hours, and you know, websites now they have dynamic pricing, so you know, and surge pricing, so a price can be really low and then a lot of people bundle in and then the price goes up gradually. It
very
just
annoying.
Starts creeping up. Yeah, it makes it very hard. That's why, you know, I said to you, I'm going to email you just before 2. The reason why I emailed you just before 2 is I've checked all the prices just now.
They could have changed.
Have changed as we speak.
We are going to give some examples of bargains a little bit later on. I've got lots of questions.
I've tried to make them contemporaneous.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you, Jamie, for that point. Lots of questions coming in about particular items to purchase, so we'll have a look at those in a moment. Fevzi Turkalp's with us. We're talking about Black Friday and your tech buying questions. Fevzi Turkalp is with us. It's a Black Friday early special in this hour, and your questions about buying tech. We'll have some more advice, more buying advice in a moment, but I've got some questions for you, Fevzi. First one is Tony in Chertsey, who says, would you please ask Fevzi if he has experience of robot vacuum cleaners?
Yes. A lot.
Go on then. Give us a pricey.
Okay, so they are still a work in progress. They are so much better and more practical than they were even 2 years ago, and you get a lot more for your money now than you used to. So one of the big drawbacks of robot vacuum cleaners has traditionally been that they needed to be emptied so often. But now even mid-range robot vacuum cleaners have the ability not to go back to the base station, not only to recharge themselves, which they've been able to do for a long time, but to empty themselves into a larger receptacle, which you then only have to empty, you know, every couple of weeks or every month, depending on how you use your robot vacuum cleaner. So they've got much better at cleaning. Obviously, they still can't do stairs. So I still think that they are an adjunct device to a main vacuum cleaner, unless you live in a flat, in which case you might be able to get away with it. But the way I view them and the way I use mine is to get into those... Just to poodle about every day by itself, often when I'm out on a schedule, and just keep the place looking neat and tidy. But I don't think, in my opinion, I wouldn't necessarily make it my only vacuum cleaner.
Can they do the edges, like up to the skirting boards?
Some of them do it better than others. They have brushes that extend. Some of them also will mop hard surfaces and detect the difference between, and they'll mop you know, empty themselves and so forth. So they're getting there, and they're very clever as well in the way that they cover the ground. So, and of course, endless cat videos of cats sitting on them.
I've never seen one of those. Have you not?
The internet's full of videos of cats sitting on them. Mind you, most of those are AI now, but back in the day, you know, 12 months ago, the cat videos were all real, and people would sit their pets on a robot vacuum cleaner. But I like them. I'm happy that they're coming down in price, or at least you can get more for your money. You can still buy ones that are about part of £1,000. But then again, so there are some conventional vacuum cleaners that cost that sort of money as well. You are paying for the smarts and the convenience. It's never going to be as good at cleaning as you know, a good conventional vacuum cleaner, but they have their place if you've got the budget for it. And you know, I know people who live in houses that have one on each floor.
But, and it's safe to go out and leave them pootling around, is it?
I do.
And but the one thing is, presumably you have to empty them. I mean, it's not completely labourless.
Well, as I say, they go back to their base station, and some of them now empty themselves into this larger receptacle. Yes. And then you have to empty the larger receptacle. But the key is, you see, because of the fact that they more or less look like a fat pizza in terms of their size, you know, any receptacle that's on board can only ever hold a small amount of dirt and dust and fluff, and therefore it's really important to get one, in my opinion, that will not only recharge itself but will go back to the bigger, essentially like a dustbin, but a bespoke dustbin for this vacuum cleaner, and it will go and it will empty itself into that. Is some of them, the ones that mop, can even clean themselves. I think, you know, there are various good brands. I mean, ones that I've got quite a lot of experience with are from Eufy, E-U-F-Y. And I find that, so Eufy is a sub-brand of Anker, and I think they're a bit like Anker in the sense that they're sort of mid-range, safe and good value for money, you know, so you don't have to pay, you know, silly prices for them. But some of theirs are also expensive, but then they're sort of bleeding edge in terms of what they can do.
Let's talk to Dominic in Doncaster. Hello, Dominic.
Hello, nice to speak to both of you.
And
hello,
you.
Hello, Dominic.
Yeah, hello.
What would you like to ask?
Yeah, my question is, Sony and people, other manufacturers like them, I've been looking on YouTube about laser vinyl record players, and I wondered if they're ever going to come to the UK. What's the process of them being made?
You know, I'm not... I mean, I don't know much about laser vinyl. I don't know that that's going to be... I don't know that that's going to be a thing, really. I mean, I remember the old laser discs. That's obviously a different thing. I wouldn't have thought that there's going to be a mass market in anything like that because, you know, the world has moved on to solid-state storage, and anything that's like that is going to be, I think, something of a retro product.
Dominic, is this... So instead of a needle, you have a laser reading the record. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's, I've seen it on YouTube. A gentleman, a Japanese gentleman, he's like done it. Like he's made it. You could actually see it on YouTube, and he just puts a vinyl record in. It's just like a CD player that you put your vinyl record in. It goes back into laser player, and he just
press
play.
Are you tempted to get one, though? Is that why you're asking? Do you have vinyl?
Well, I do have vinyl, yeah. And the thing is, though, it just plays like a normal record, and it corrects itself if your record happens to be warped or anything like that. I think there's about maybe 7 lasers in it that does all corrections and all that.
Wow.
And my other question is that a company called Elbow, a cassette Walkman, like, and you can actually see the cassette, and it's like clamps over the cassette.
Yes.
And I've seen that on YouTube as well, but that's about going back about 8 years ago. But I'm just wondering if there's anything going to come out from Sony and people like them.
I think Sony are, I mean, there are some exceptions, but they're not the innovator that they were, you know, in the latter part of the last century, in the early part of this one. They've been somewhat usurped by some of the Korean brands like Samsung and LG. And it's quite interesting because those two brands used to be what were called below-the-line brands, that they would make most of their money by supplying parts to other manufacturers. And in fact, you often find Samsung and LG screens inside Sony TVs, for example. So the leading technology tends not to be Sony. I mean, there are some exceptions to that. But I think you need to look at, you know, don't go by brands, because even the good brands produce some bad products, right? So you have to look at it. And where you said, oh, I've seen this, and particularly where you say, you know, you've seen it on YouTube, what you need to do is a little bit of research, broader research, not just on YouTube. Do some deep research into it. If you use an AI system, for example, Perplexity is pretty good. There's a free version of Perplexity, which does very good consumer research. So you could try and use a product like that, or Google. If you look at Google and you look at the AI mode built into the Google website now, that's also very good. I mean, that's a strength for them. So I would do a lot more research, look for independent opinions on it. Whilst we've been talking, I've been looking up the vinyl record players, and you're right, that essentially the pickup, the needle, is replaced by a laser. And you can see that there will be some benefits to something like that, because it's not doing any physical wear on the record if they tune the lasers correctly, but it's not putting any drag and inertia on it, you know, so you shouldn't get the same problems.
Shouldn't wear out your vinyl.
Yeah, the only thing I would say about that is that a needle on a record player, or, you know, or a pickup, or cartridge, is analog. Yeah, so those movements. So the disc is analog. It's not encoded as, not like a CD where it's a pit or a no pit, which is digital encoding. What you've got is a continuous movement of the needle left and right, up, possibly up and down. When you replace that physical needle with a laser, I can't help but think we're back to a digital system, which can be good if it's a very high resolution digital system, but you will get digital artifacting, because ultimately the laser's going to work in pulses, and it turns an analog medium back into a digital medium. So I do wonder whether you're going to see all of the benefits that you would, you get the obvious benefits potentially if it's designed well, but would you lose something in terms of the analog feel? I think the jury would be out on that. You'd have to be, to buy a product like that, you'd have to make sure you could return it.
Taking your advice and searching a little on laser turntables. Yeah. And they're definitely a thing, as you say, but the main thing that Google is saying is that they are extremely expensive. Dominic is asking whether they'll ever be household and cheap. I doubt very much. I mean, they're quoting around $15,000 for one of the models. But
there are people that pay that for hi-fi separates right?
And so, people love their vinyl now as well.
Yeah, but whether it will be a mass market thing, I don't know. And if it were made, I mean, I suppose you could get that down in price to something that was, you know, even in the low hundreds of pounds. But my question would be, you know, would you have lost some of the analog nature of the device?
Which was the whole point.
Yeah, because I can't see how a laser would provide an analog output. It would probably provide a very high resolution digital output.
All right, great question, Dominic. Thank you very much. Lots more questions and comments coming in. Plus, we get to take you through a few Black Friday bargains as well. And later on, I'll get Fevzi to explain where you can catch up with all his recommendations on social media as well. I'm Clive Bull, with you through till 4. Later on, after 3, we'll be taking a look at some of the other news stories making the news this morning. Right now, though, we're talking about Black Friday and technology. Your questions to Fevzi Turkalp, editor of GadgetDetective.com. And we've got more questions coming in. Here's Harry in Letchworth. Hello, Harry.
Good morning.
Hello, Harry.
I'm fascinated by the discussion about robot vacuum cleaners. I was recently looking to possibly buy one for a very disabled friend, but having sort of gone down a fair list of them, the majority have in the small print, as ever, not suitable for use on carpets. Now, that seems to defeat the object in the first place.
So, I mean, most places have a carpet.
I should tell my robot vacuum cleaner this, because it seems to do them quite well.
Well, the question is, what sort of money am I going to have to lay out to find one that will happily run over the carpet and take the cat hairs and all the biscuit crumbs and what have you out of it?
Okay, so I don't recognise this claim that they're not suitable for carpets. They're made for carpets. What they don't do is they don't have a sort of a brush that beats a carpet in the same way as some conventional vacuum cleaners does. So they're less good at lifting out the dust that might be deep seated in a carpet. But I think that's partly offset by the fact that you can run them daily. And that's really the best way of using them. Just let it run around your home on a daily basis, so that whereas you might do the manual vacuuming once a week, for example, you could set this to do every day. So it might not get everything out to the same depth as a conventional vacuum cleaner, but then it might not have to. So crumbs and things, once crumbs are trodden in, once cat hair or pet fur has become entangled, it's harder to dislodge. And there are attachments, particularly for conventional vacuum cleaners, that are specifically made, vacuum cleaners and attachments for them, that are particularly made for that. And also, you need to have regard to the filters at these things. The ideal filter in a vacuum cleaner of whatever sort is a HEPA filter, H-E-P-A. And what that is it's a standard of filter that will filter out even the smallest allergens. There was some research during the height of COVID and some experiments that found that HEPA filters could, they didn't make these claims for obvious reasons, but the science was showing that HEPA filters can trap COVID particles, and that there were experiments where that when they put them into schools, that the actual transmission rate dropped by about 15%, if my memory serves correctly. So filters on vacuum cleaners are very important, because what you don't want is something that sucks it up and then blows it out the back, as it were, if you're talking about a conventional cleaner. If you've got a good filter, and the traditional ones tend to have, more of them have better filters, let's say. The problem with the robot ones is that they're small, and everything is built down to a size, as it were. And you do compromise, but you have the benefit of it is the fact that it will just run by itself almost continuously if you want it to. And that keeps your home looking nice.
So what sort of figure would Harry have to pay for a standard one that will definitely do carpets?
So So they'll all do carpets, but in general, I would say don't spend less than 250. You 250 to 400. So they're not cheap, and that would be sort of lower to middle range. I mean, you can spend, as I say, the better part of £1,000 on it, but to an extent, there is a sweet spot somewhere in the middle around the 400 mark. But again, okay, that's still a lot.
Quite a lot of money. Yes.
It is, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Harry, for that one. Mike says, for anybody thinking about a robot lawnmower, I got the cheapest one off Amazon back in the summer. Best price, £250 I have ever spent. Lawn has been cut once a week, every week since I got it, and I've not lifted a finger. The one I got is called a Lawnmaster. So, yeah, praise indeed. I didn't even know they existed.
Yeah, so the technologies are similar in the sense of their sort of the guidance systems and the tracking systems. They use software algorithms that are similar to the robots that search for mines, you know, mine sweeping robots, because what you want is make sure it doesn't miss any of it and it covers the space in the most efficient way, you know, and that's actually quite an interesting algorithm. And so the algorithms inside a lot of these are similar or based upon the mine sweeping robots.
Let's talk to Warren in Northwood. Hello, Warren.
Good morning, Clivey.
Morning.
And Fezzy.
Hello, Warren.
Good morning. Hello, Fezzy. Okay, I've got a question for you, which I don't want to complicate too much because it might be quite boring for the listeners, but I want to talk about NAS drives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got fed up with having lots of different hard drives around, plugged into all my different outlets, some being 1 terabyte, some being 3, and having lots of folders in all different drives. So I've gone down the NAS drive route, and I've just purchased a Synology 4 drive NAS.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually purchased the memory for it yet because the actual drive itself was over £600, so they're quite expensive.
Yeah.
And the memories are, you know, I'm going to go for probably 4 lots of 8 terabytes. So I know one of them I'm going to use as a backup, and then the other 3 lots of 8 will be the memory. But my question is this. Firstly, it's quite complicated, it seems, to set it up. You've got the options of setting up as RAID 0 or 1 or 5 or this, yes, that and the other.
Yes.
The other thing, my main purpose for it is I do a lot of photography and photography editing. And when I'm at home, I do it on my desktop. And then if I go away, I like to take my Apple MacBook Pro with me and continue editing on Lightroom or Photoshop. However, up until now, I've had to unplug the drives, take it with me because all my photos are on the drive, and then plug it into the, you know. So I'm hoping, the other question is, first question is, do I have to go with Synology drives in the Synology NAS, or can I use another drive like Wolf Pro? And second question is, is it going to be easy to set up, and what RAID should I use? RAID 5, I've been on YouTube, it seems. And yeah, third question, finally, is it easy when I'm away, so when I'm remote and away with my laptop, I can log into my NAS drive, which is back at home. And I think there's options of doing that. One, you can do it through a website-based system or another way. So those are my questions.
Okay,
I hope I've not confused you too
much. All right,
much.
Warren, no, it's fine. Okay. Let me just take a step back and just explain what a NAS drive is.
Yeah, I think you better.
Know.
Otherwise,
so
nobody will know what you're talking about.
NAS stands for Network Attached Storage. So hard disks or SSD, solid-state drives, traditionally we plug them in via USB and they work as an extension of that particular computer. A network-attached storage is storage that sits on your local area network. That's to say the network around your home or your office. And the benefit of that is that all the devices that you use can access that storage. So, for example, you could put your entire film and music library on it and then access it from different points in your home because the storage is not belonging as an extension of one computer. It's sitting on the network and in principle accessible by everything. Now, to try and answer these questions, do you need to use a Synology drive? So Synology is one of the market leaders in this area. Synology have recently been making moves to make their system more proprietary, and one of the areas is that certain models require their branding of drive, which is in my opinion, not a good practice, right? It's going in the wrong direction, you know, and because their drives are then more expensive and there's nothing special about them, and the general drives used to work fine with all their machines. So it's a recent thing, and I think it's a commercial decision rather than necessarily a technical one. So it will depend, but do be aware, you will need to check the drive compatibility list for your particular network attached storage box to see if that works. Okay, moving on from that, what RAID configuration? So when you a network attached storage box contains a number of drives. It can be two, it can be four drives, it can be more. And you can configure those drives in different ways to achieve different results. So if you wanted the fastest possible speed, what you do is you'd have it so that a single file that was being written to it was actually being written in part to one file, in part to one drive, and in part to another, and maybe more, and that would give you more speed, but it would give you the least reliability because it only takes one of those drives to fail for you to lose all your data because there's no redundancy. Okay. Mm-hmm. The other RAID form, RAID 1, is where it is a perfect mirror. So if you have a certain amount of storage, you only have half of that amount usable because the other half is essentially a real-time mirror or real-time backup of the drive. So that's quite good redundancy, but then you're losing half your storage. RAID 5 is a compromise. So if you have four drives, you might be using one of the drives by clever algorithms for redundancy, but benefit from the storage on the other three. So I think RAID 5 is often a good compromise, but it depends on what your risk tolerance is and what you need in terms of performance. And you can reconfigure these things, but I think RAID 5 is a reasonable place to start. What was the third question? I'm so sorry, I've forgotten.
That's fine. So I'll be storing a lot of photography.
Remote access, right?
Yes. Yeah, so I want to be able to edit those images. Let's say I'm in New York with a laptop. I can open the laptop. No, nothing's on the laptop at all apart from Lightroom or Photoshop. And I can then remotely access the data from my NAS back in the UK and continue editing from where I left off.
And are we talking stills or also some video?
No videos, just stills. Okay.
So, and what's the size of the capacity that you need? I mean, because I'm just wondering whether you couldn't actually put it on a local drive, which would be more reliable and easier. To answer the question that you actually asked, is it possible? Yes. Is it tricky? Yes. Particularly if you want to do it in a way that's secure, that allows you to punch through the firewall, but doesn't allow anyone else to do it. So I would say that might be worth spending a little bit of money to get someone to help you with, to get it done correctly.
Okay, Warren, thank you very much. Still questions coming in. We'll take some more shortly, and we're also going to whiz through some Black Friday recommendations. And if we don't get time for your question, or you don't get the full details of any of the products that Fevzi mentions, we'll give you a special email where Fevzi has promised he will. You're going to reply to these emails, aren't you?
Will, yeah. And I'm going to produce a guide that includes some of the advice that I've given and some additional advice as well, and a couple of the best deals updated, because I realise that, you know, it's nearly 3 a.m. and not everyone is going to be with a pen.
What was that model? No, exactly. Yeah. Okay, we'll come back in a moment. Fevzi Tokalp is with me till 3. After 3, we'll be taking a look at some of the other stories making the news this morning. Quick one for you, Fevzi, here on a WhatsApp. Fevzi, will the Switch 2 be cheaper now, or do I wait till Christmas time?
That's a very good question. I think the best pricing will remain constant between now and Christmas, but you know, I would look for
would it be cheaper after Christmas?
Generally it will get cheaper over time, right? And there'll be peaks and troughs. I think if the answer is, if you want it now, buy it now and you won't suffer too much. If you want to wait till Christmas, you could probably find similar deals around Christmas.
Okay, here's John in Greenwich. Morning, John.
Yeah, hi, Clive.
Hi.
Clive, my question is a bit more of a moral question.
Okay.
But I used to give on Amazon to Amazon Smile for charities. I give to, I just wanted to say this. I give to Make-A-Wish Foundation. Their mission is to grant life-changing wishes for children aged 3 to 7 who are diagnosed with, like, critical illnesses. And I know Black Friday, people can get things cheaper and whatever, but I think we've become so caught up in, you know, getting this deal, getting that deal, and yet charities are in need of funding and that. And I think sometimes we buy what we want, not what we need. And I just wondered, does Amazon still have any programs where people can give, you know, to the charities or
through,
like,
their purchases? So you mentioned Amazon. Sorry to cut across you. You mentioned Amazon Smile. So Amazon Smile was a charity donation scheme that was run by Amazon globally, including in the UK. It hasn't been around since about the beginning of 2023. But the way it used to work was about 0.5% of the value of your purchases would go to the charity of your choice. And there was literally about 1 million charities that you could choose from. So you'd choose a charity that meant something to you, and then you'd feel good about spending money with Amazon because of 0.5%. Of course, a better way of doing it would be to buy one less item a year and donate that money. But the Smile system, on the one hand, I think it raised globally about $500 million to charities. But on the other hand, because there were so many charities, other than the big ones, the small ones used to get very little amounts. And that was one of the reasons that Amazon gave for shutting down the program. So I don't think they have any equivalent. So it came in this country about 2017, and it went out about 6 years later at the beginning of 2023. And I think it's a shame, because I used to donate through that, and it made me feel good about my habit of buying stuff. But it doesn't exist anymore. But I think that doesn't mean we can't donate to charities. It just means that we need to do it consciously. And as I say, just buying one thing less that we don't need will make you better off financially, and then you can easily donate a part of that saving and something that doesn't clutter your home and that you really don't need at the moment.
That is a great point, John. Thank you very much for that. Good to talk to you as ever. Now, we've only got a few minutes left. I wonder if you could, I know you've put together a guide to some of the bargains you've spotted and gadgets you'd recommend. So perhaps you could, we will point to where your guide will be accessible online later on. But if you could just whiz us through a few of these,
I've got up to 7 that we can get through, but I'm going to go through them quickly.
Okay.
So these are deals of products that I've used and can recommend. The deals are current, okay? And the retailers are good. So first deal is from a company called Crucial that makes memory products. This is an SSD, which is the modern equivalent to a hard disk drive. It's called the Crucial T710. It's an ultra-fast 4 terabyte SSD that can fit inside a modern computer or inside an enclosure. You know, what we were discussing with Warren earlier, you can plug it in directly. So this thing, previous cheapest price, this is the 4 terabyte version, which is very capacious, was cheapest price was $365. It's now down to just under $320. So it's not a huge saving, but it's a real saving, 12.3% cheaper than the cheapest price previously. Moving on from that, we have a charger. So from Anker, we call the Anker Prime Charger. This is a desktop charger that can charge up to 6 items at once, USB charger. It has a total output of 200 watts. It's very efficient. I bought one of these with my own money. I'm looking at it right. I'm touching it right now. It's a great item because it's not only 200 watts, but the way that it's configured is really good. So you can charge 2 things at 100 watts each, which a lot of them won't do. This one does it. It was selling for $79.99 until recently. The average selling price is £71. It's currently $49.99, which is 30% less than the average price.
Good, good.
Moving on, we have Eufy. Eufy, again, is an Anker brand, and it's a security camera that you can buy and use without having to pay a subscription. It's called the Solocam S340. It's a dual camera system, so it's got 2 separate cameras for different focal lengths and different qualities that can be used together. It rotates, so you don't have any blind spots. It can literally, you put it on the corner, it can look around the corner and follow someone as it does it. It comes with a solar panel as well, as I say, doesn't require subscription. List price on it is £180. The average was £164. Currently £99, so that's 40% off the average saving. And it's also won an award from Which magazine. It is a good one. I've used this one myself. Works very well, and it's an example of a real deal, right? 40% off the average selling price. Moving on from that, you know my penchant for electronic synthesizers.
Yes.
There is a French company called Arturia, A-R-T-U-R-I-A. They make, they do hardware, but they also make software synthesizers. They do one called the V Collection Pro. It's 45 classic synthesizers, faithfully reproduced in software, and computers are amazingly fast now, you know, by old standards, and so they can really faithfully reproduce even the analog synths. Arturia.com, currently 50% off. So this bundle that would normally cost about €700 is about half of that. I noticed when I logged in, it offered it to me for €99, but I don't think everyone will get that price, but it's worth setting it up. Arturia.com. Moving on, gadget number five is from a company that's not well known called Aqara, A-Q-A-R-A. And they do smart devices. I wanted to look at two of their smart locks. So a smart lock is something that can go on your front door or an internal door. It can be controlled in a variety of ways from an app on your smartphone. It can work by biometrics, you know, fingerprint reader, for example. It can detect your phone and your phone acts as your key. But it also does some clever tricks, like let's say you've got people that need to have access to your home during certain hours, like a cleaner or a carer, dog walker, whatever it is. You can do it so that their access code only works during certain hours.
Uh-huh. So it's like the smart equivalent of one of those key locker things that you have outside people's houses.
But it fits onto a standard locking mechanism, and it essentially turns the key for
you. Oh, really?
So it's quite clever. And the non-light version also has a numeric keypad that you can just punch in the code. So there's a very variety of ways you can do it. Now, normally this thing, the previous cheapest price was 190 and it's now 170, but it has sold quite consistently for over, well, it was selling consistently for over 200. There's also the light version that has many of the features but not all the bells and whistles. That's currently just under £90. That usually sells for about £128.
So if I got one of those and stuck it on my over my front door lock, which is basically what it does, could I then let somebody in using my phone when I'm somewhere else?
Yes.
Oh, that's very clever.
And also, if you're in the house but not mobile, you can do that as well. Brilliant. So if you can't get to the front door. So it's a bit better than that robot. You remember that robot that was being marketed recently, a sort of humanoid robot?
Yeah.
And one of the things it can do is open the door.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't need to recreate a humanoid to do that sort
Absolutely.
Of thing. The last thing is not a gadget and it's free. Microsoft 365 Personal Edition, which is, Word and Excel and, all their major office apps. If you are a student and you have a tertiary education email address, you can have it free for a year. And it includes
Fantastic.
Up to 5 devices and 1 terabyte of storage and the Copilot AI system as well.
Now, we whizzed through that very quickly. So if you want to get more details of any of that, you will be put... Where are you going to put this up?
So I'm going to do it as a PDF. It will be up later today. So there'll be 2 ways you can get it. You can either seek me out at Gadget Detective on X/Twitter. Just, if you kindly subscribe, that would be very nice. But if you don't use X or Twitter, you can just email me at blackfriday@gadgetdetective.com. If you just email me and say, yes, please, I will send you a PDF with the information that we've been discussing.
BlackFriday@gadgetdetective.com.
All one word, BlackFriday, all one word, @gadgetdetective.com.
And can I just put you on the spot here? There are several questions that have come in that I haven't had time to ask you about various buying recommendations. Is it okay if we send people off to that website, that email address as well?
Yeah, and you can do
have
that.
A go at answering them?
Or if someone wants to share that question so other people can benefit, then do it on Twitter, if you want. But if you prefer to email me directly, that's fine.
Fantastic. Well, Fevzi, thank you so much for your time and valuable advice, as ever. Lovely to talk to you, and thanks for all the calls and questions. And as I say, apologies if I didn't get your question. We had a lot of questions in, and if we didn't get around to yours, then send it off to Fevzi one way or the other, and he'll do his best to answer it. Well, now I've put him on the spot. He says he will.